Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today is Wednesday, September 14th. I'm reporting live from Houston, Texas. My co-host, Stan Friedman, will not be with us today as he is in Washington, D.C. at the IFA event. And I imagine at this point, he is probably trekking up to Capitol Hill to speak with some of the congressmen. It's a great event. All of you that are out there in Washington, D.C., be safe, travel home safe. I look forward to hearing more about this year's event. You know, speaking about the IFA, we had a press release come out 2 days ago. I'd like to touch on some of it. It's the new economic impact study commissioned by the International Franchise Association, which shows franchise businesses produce significant impact on the U.S. economy. It's quite a comprehensive report. The one in particular, one point in particular that really like to point out, Robert Crisanti, the IFA president and CEO, former guest of Franchise Day, said the study illustrates that the franchise businesses are critical components of the U.S. economy, fostering entrepreneurship by empowering local, independent, and diverse small business owners who are creating jobs in many sectors. He goes on to say, as Washington works to strengthen and renew our economy, policymakers should remember that franchising is making a difference in every local community across the country. And I want to remind everybody of that that might be listening. You know, a lot of people that are out there really don't understand the impact of franchising. I know we have Small Business Saturday coming up 2 days after Thanksgiving. It's been a passion of mine to make sure franchising gets recognized during that event. Many of our listeners know the efforts that I've had with American Express and bringing franchising front and center. We need to keep the course with that. So as you see information come through in social media, please piggyback that. Please make sure we get the information out there that is necessary for our country leaders as well as some of these other organizations like American Express to fully understand the impact of franchising. You know, the study went on further to say franchise businesses provided more jobs in 2016 than wholesale trade, transportation, warehousing, non-durable goods manufacturing, and information including software and print publishing, motion pictures and videos, radio and television broadcasting, and to telecommunications carriers and resellers. So franchising is definitely making an impact. And talking about making an impact, today's guest, Bill Redfern, is somebody that from reading the different press releases and talking with the people at All Points Public Relations really has made an impact. I pulled up a quote that he had, which was, "Don't fear failure. Positivity is the key to success." And I think that's just a tremendous quote that many of us should really follow. Bill, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you so much, Paul. I'm very happy to be here with you.
Well, thank you for being here. And as we talked about just before the show, it is very conversational. We're going to go through a series of parts in the show. And, you know, reading about your history, you've accomplished a lot, obviously, and it looks like the goals and the plans are far greater than many would even anticipate. But let's first, you know, drill down into, you know, who Bill Redfern is, how you started in business, and what led you up to the point of developing, you know, several brands, and then, of course, looking at it from a greater perspective of international growth.
Paul, thanks so much for the kind words. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family, generally around the construction and general contracting businesses, and having worked in and around those businesses, you know, during your summer breaks from school, and what have you, I guess I always had a sense that I would be involved in business in one format or another. And in my, you know, first years, I worked in the family business a little bit, did my education in and around business and marketing. And, you know, as a background, I guess, you know, seeing a lot of construction and related work led me to looking at real estate investing. And as a very young man, I started buying investment properties, small apartment buildings, and that was my introduction to real estate. And really, it pointed me not only in business, but in the direction of real estate, which, you know, generally we still operate primarily in the real estate sector today with two of our three brands. And through several years of buying and increasing a portfolio of investment properties, that led me into real estate sales and brokerage and, you know, onward and upward. So that was really the basis of my background, was an introduction to business and then subsequently real estate.
So some years back, mid-2000s, you decided to launch a brand, Buyer's Choice Home Inspections. What led you to that? What did you see in the market that made you think that this would be an opportunity to pursue?
I saw the home inspection market, and this comes from my experience as a realtor and as a broker, going back really to the late 1980s, where as a young man I was buying investment properties, and I would use, you know, some of the early home inspectors of the day in that era. And more often than not, it was more of a contractor, you know, in the evening or after hours that would have a look at a property for you in those days, as opposed to a professional inspector. And then you roll that forward a little bit in through the early 1990s, Paul, when I was sitting at my desk at RE/MAX, and three or four out of every 10 transactions that came across your desk in those days would probably involve a home inspection. And it got me thinking about it back in those days, that there must be a better way to work with home inspectors, because they were, you know, it was a bit of an ad hoc industry, really. They were a cottage industry. You know, there was lots of great folks in the business, but there was a lot of inconsistencies. And being exposed to the likes of RE/MAX and seeing the great work they did in the franchising world in terms of growing and developing the organization, I started thinking back then that, you know, possibly home inspection, which as a service comes very late in the real estate transaction. And when we looked at it as realtors and brokers, it was one of those services that was somewhat unregulated and very much inconsistent. So it caused us lots of grief and caused us lots of damage control after the fact, after the job was performed. And unfortunately, it was very late in the transaction after the effort was expended of, you know, showing people many, many homes and, the you know, the poor people getting their hopes up, having an accepted offer, and then maybe, you know, basically having the bomb dropped in their lap, thinking the home wasn't quite the home they thought it was after an inspection was performed, and perhaps some things were blown out of proportion, which seemed to happen more often than not after the inspection you know, summarized his findings with the purchasing customers. So that really planted the seed in terms of the home inspection industry needing some help. And leading that up into the early 2000s, I started about a two-year R&D process of developing a Buyer's Choice Home Inspections, where I was just trying to find a way that we could raise the bar on not only the consumer expectation, but the industry standard of what was present in the market, everything from the touch, the feel, the appearance of the business, the customer service, the friendliness, you know, with the customer, the ease of use by a customer, you know, as opposed to hearing later about a report. You know, we considered methods of having the customer go with our inspectors and see every nook and cranny of the home or property. So there was an awful lot of research and development, but that was the rationale for opening a franchise in the home inspection sector, was uniformity and professionalism for the consumer and the real estate industry to, you know, to reap the benefits of just having professionals to work with, as opposed to the inconsistencies, you know, that we experienced through the 80s and 90s.
Well, starting the company in Canada in the mid-2000s, obviously you started off right out of the box doing something right, because within 2 years, and correct me if I'm wrong, you turned into Canada's largest home inspection franchise within that period.
You are correct. In fact, it was just a day under 2 years. I'll never forget the day. We were already well into relocating, you know, the company into the U.S. market already, and I think I was sitting in our rented space in Florida, and I believe it was when President Obama was first elected, the day that we found out we were now the largest in the Canadian market, just a day shy of 2 years into the franchising business, and that was, you know, superseding other competitors that have been in the business 20-odd years. So we were pretty proud of that and still are.
I would imagine so. And since then, you have nearly 200 franchises operating in 19 countries around the world. So, I mean, that's obviously a tremendous achievement. But how does the services that you provide, you know, transcend across all these different borders? I mean, we think about, you know, cultures and economic environments and everything that goes on in different countries as being somewhat different. But yet, in respect to home inspection, the common denominator is your company. How did you find that transcending across all these borders?
Well, it was an interesting challenge, and it was one that I enjoyed. Having opened up into the U.S. and started our initial expansion into the United States, you know, the economy was falling off a cliff. The real estate sector was in bad shape, and we looked internationally as a means to start to continue the, you know, basically what was going to be phase three of our growth, because the U.S. being phase two of our growth was going to be stalled for a period of years. We didn't know how long it would be stalled at that point in time, but we had to think 2 or 3 years. And the objective was to grow the company, you know, right from the get-go in that R&D phase of developing the company. We wanted to be a franchise. It was designed as a franchise from the beginning. And we certainly wanted a big footprint in North America. We had designs on international, but thought that would come after the United States was developed to a certain level. And with the U.S. really stalling economically at that point in time in 2009, we had to start looking internationally. And when you look at any country, as you just identified, you have so many idiosyncrasies that make it a really interesting challenge. And I think the only way that we could overcome that, Paul, was just by me traveling, you know, into each different market, doing a fair amount of research, doing a lot of discussions and meetings with consumers, with realtors, title companies, real estate attorneys, whatever the case may be in a given location, and just peeling back the layers of research to see where we fit in and if there was an interest in the service and to try to explore some opportunities to open our services. It was interesting that we found out sometime later that none of the other home inspection companies or franchises in the industry had gone out internationally. So we were kind of exploring new territory as the service did not actually exist in many countries. So interesting challenge, but it was something we took on, with great enthusiasm. And we even found some of the name changes that were required. Some of the ex-communist countries, for instance, we had to change a Buyer's Choice Home Inspections to a Buyer's Choice Home Experts because the word inspections, for instance, had a negative connotation, reminding people of the word inspectors, you know, thinking of, you know, some bad guy hiding around the corner in a trench coat keeping an eye on them or something.
Yeah, I could imagine that, and I hadn't even thought about, you know, some of those type of countries. But when I looked at, you know, the number 19, I knew it had to be some, you know, countries that people might not be as mainstream as, you know, the U.S. and Canada. Is there any particular story or event that occurred while you were, you know, expanding into 19 countries that you can share that, you know, maybe it was exciting or maybe just so unique that you were able to get around?
Oh, boy. That's a long list. You know, it's interesting. A lot of the world is, you know, the buildings, the residential buildings are masonry construction. And you know, when you look at some of the European cities where you have a 300-year-old house, that's, you know, the lower section of the exterior walls might be 2 foot, 3 foot thickness. And, you know, you're pitching to the real estate community and the consumers the benefit of doing an inspection. And And I remember the first looks on their faces. You know, there was no buy-in whatsoever, and I'm presenting this opportunity and the, you know, the fantastic features of the service and how in North America it's almost standard that every transaction involve an inspection. And they're looking at me and they're saying, this house has been here 300 years. Why would I need someone to look at it?
Yeah,
and I'm in front of a room with... I'm in front of a room of 75 people, and I had to think for a minute. Well, you know, you have a point, but let's have a look at it and see if we can't, you know, find out some rationale. So we had a lot of fun with some of those early services that we did, you know, just for examples, and those 300-year-old homes, you know, certainly proved the point that they needed to be looked at as much as a three-day-year-old home. And, you know, we peeled back the layers of all the dozens of renovations that have been done over the years and the, you know, the mismatched wiring and the leakage and on and on and on. So it wasn't hard to prove the need for the service, so we had a lot of fun with that. Some of the other challenges came in and around translation, as I had just shared with you about a, you know, name change requirement. And when you're looking at translating training materials, software, on and on and on, yeah, there's certainly some interesting challenges. Otherwise, just logistics, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, the various economic factors, you know, currencies, the economic ability of the consumers in a given market. You know, there's some markets that we've gone into, you know, Latin America, for instance, where you might have 16 to 18% of the population that could even afford to use your service that are in the real estate sector. So, yeah, it's an interesting challenge to do anything internationally.
Yeah, I imagine it is, and having a little bit of a construction experience early on in my career, I started thinking about, you know, all those, you know, older homes, like you said, these 300 homes in Europe, and I'm saying, where would you start? What is the standard you're inspecting against? There's so many differences to, you know, those homes as opposed to, you know, a lot of the homes in America that are, you know, very similar in structure. So I imagine it was very challenging. And then, of course, the translation. Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I imagine, too, it probably runs up. You probably ran up against in some areas where people said, well, just give us your blessing and here's a couple of dollars and look the other way. Because we know that's, you know, that goes on in a lot of countries today. So it was probably a very interesting turn of events. And certainly, I admire the fact that, you know, you look from Canada to the U.S. and realize that, you know, the growth wasn't going to be in the U.S. for those next few years and immediately turn to the international market. I think that's just an absolute, you know, tremendous vision to have and to follow through on that. But I know you know that. You're at the helm for a reason. But in the midst of all that, you get a few years down the road, the economy kind of settles down a little bit, and then you launch a couple of additional brands. Tell us some of the philosophy and thought behind that.
Yes, absolutely. That was something that we had in the back of our minds for some time, and particularly with iCare, Intelligent Home Care Services. It's such a predominant need in the marketplace, and you know, many families experience it firsthand, where, you know, one of the sisters or brothers, you know, one of the family spouse has to sacrifice an awful lot in order to have their folks move in with them, who may be getting elderly, may want to stay in their own home, or may not be able to, or what have you. And we experienced it myself as a family with my grandmother, and I know many people have. And then I experienced it firsthand here locally, having fallen off my triathlon bicycle doing a training ride one morning and you know, broke a few bones, some ribs and a clavicle. And to be able to find someone, you know, when you go home from the hospital and you realize you need some help for a couple of weeks, you're not getting around very well, and you know, you're not mobile, it's almost impossible. So, and I would have been willing to pay, you know, a fair amount of money to have someone, you know, do some support services for me for two or three weeks until I was a little more mobile. So it really presented the need front and center. And again, we kind of waited until the economy started coming around to really started working on eye care a couple of years ago. And to launch it, to me, was a bit of a no-brainer. You know, the service is huge. It's something we're all going to need sooner or later to be able to stay in your own home versus to go into an assisted living facility or a senior home. You know, we're all going to face that at some point in time, and the costs are, you know, I guess on average, when you look at the statistics, you know, for a couple thousand dollars a month, you know, most people can buy enough time from a home care provider to be kept reasonably comfortable in their own home versus a multiple of three times or more of that, you know, up in the $6,000-$8,000 range to go into some sort of assistance facility where you're not in the comfort of your own home. And you know, the surroundings are not pleasant at times. I recently looked with a friend here who was trying to find a place for their grandmother. And I mean, you had to, even though this was a fairly nice facility and it wasn't cheap by any means, you had to almost plug your nose to walk through some of the rooms. And,
yeah,
you know, that speaks to the level of attention and care that they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's unfortunate. So the business seemed like a no-brainer, and it really fit into the model of what we do, which is a low-overhead work-from-home business model for the franchise, where they can develop a business without a massive upfront investment that is something real that they can enjoy doing. They're not killing themselves on expenses as they develop their business. They're developing something real with real equity that has real stickiness with the consumers, that has some staying power. So we thought that would be a nice fit. And for us, in designing a franchise that was in a different industry, the business model was very similar and worked for us, and we saw it as a need. Since then, we've added a bit of layers to that business in terms of service offerings, and we're just designing that now. That's with the respect of special needs, children and adults. And, you know, it's, again, funny how these things come about sometimes, but it was just a result of my own experiences, Paul. Two of my own three children are autistic. And having children on the autism spectrum, you have firsthand experience with the difficulty that people experience in finding caregivers for the various functions that you would want people to come into your home. Everything from occupational therapy, you know, teaching a child the pincer grip to hold a pen or pencil so they can learn to print, to, you know, some of them don't have great dexterity with their hands or fingers, to, you know, any number of things. And speech therapists, ABA therapists, you know, on and on goes the list. And another one that's become very popular, and I know certainly works with my own children who are 9 and 11 years of age, is respite care, someone that can take the child after school for 3 or 4 hours and help with social integration and social skills. You know, everything from maybe going out and going for a swim in a community pool and learning to approach and socialize with other children, and maybe waiting in line properly as opposed to butting to the head of a line for an ice cream for a treat afterwards. So there's an awful lot that we can do, and our thought on adding this to the basket of services that the home care franchises would offer was very simple, because as a parent, and as many of the other parents that I speak with, I do a lot of fundraising with the Autism Speaks organization in Canada, and we've added on to that. We're doing some more now in other areas as well. It's a common complaint that people have no central resource to find help for their children and or adults, you know, with special needs. So we really hope to develop that side of the business where it's not just a senior citizen focus, but anyone from, like I gave you the example of my own experience where I left the hospital and just absolutely could not find anyone at any price to assist me for 2 or 3 weeks while I was hobbling around the house with broken bones, to someone that would help with your special needs children and or adults.
Yeah, sure. Most people would just assume when they hear home health care that it would be for senior citizens. And there are, as you've just pointed out, I mean, there are a lot of others that need it. And I'm sure we could develop an entire show around all those needs because there are a lot. And also what I found also from personal experience looking at some alternatives or options for my mom is that, you know, some of these, you know, senior care centers, they're very, to me, they're drastic steps going from independent living to the next phase and to the next phase, and certainly being able to graduate progressively within their own home in the comfort of their own home, I think gives them certainly a lot more quality of life. So you went from there, I think it was just a year later, and launched iHandyman. How did that come about?
Yes, that's correct. And I'll just touch on something before I talk about iHandyman, Paul, that you just mentioned. You know, something that bothers me that we saw in doing our research and a lot of consumer discussions with the current state of caregiving. And again, in our franchise models, you know, I'm a little bit old school. I believe in people answering the phone and actually living a high level of customer experience if they can and customer mm-hmm. service. Something that bothered me, and it seemed to annoy a lot of customers, and maybe you've experienced this, is caregivers that come in and they're more like a glorified babysitter. You know, they may have a
right.
little bit of interaction with the customer, or they may not, but more often than not, the complaint that we're hearing was they come in, they may or may not say hello and help the person, you know, doing a whole lot around the home, do their duties,
mm-hmm.
and then they sit in the corner playing with their iPhone. So there's no engagement,
right.
there's no interaction, and you know, the poor senior sits there watching TV all day, you know, which they could do
right.
on their own. So it's something we've taken upon ourselves to try and mandate programs where they interact with the person as much as the family would or would not like, and whether that means taking them out to a local park or a grocery store in addition to the normal care services, or just simply engaging them. You know, maybe it's a game of checkers or a game of cards once in a while, whatever it
mm-hmm.
may be, to keep their mind active and to keep them happy. You know, I think the quality of life is a big part of that benefit of them being able to remain in their own home.
Yep, absolutely.
So iHandyman,
so from there,
you asked
yeah,
about... Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
iHandyman seemed like a natural add-on for us. If you look at the Canadian market alone, where we do tens of thousands of home inspections annually, almost every one of those home inspections describes various issues in a home of a moderate or mild nature, some of the more severe,
sure.
Like an electrical issue that would need to be fixed immediately. You know, it could be a life safety issue. And the challenge people find, and I'm sure you found it, and I know I do here locally, is for small repairs or small service calls, small items, whether it's plumbing, electrical, or what have you, you know, maybe you have a broken ceramic tile in your entryway, to get someone in to do a small job is very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be consistent on every market we looked at, really across North America, and I think we even hear it, you know, around the world. So we got thinking about it, and rather than just designing another Johnny-come-lately handyman service, which I didn't see a lot of value in, I wanted to have something new and unique, there's a lot of those guys out there, but we could offer something to that market in terms of, like we did with home inspection, in terms of professionalism, branding, give them a lot of marketing horsepower, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought we could do more than that. So without sharing all of our secrets, we've designed a handyman service where people can subscribe to an annual service agreement with our handyman franchises, whereas they can pay monthly or annually, what have you, and have a typical basket of services completed on a regular basis, and they can choose whether that's quarterly or semi-annually or what have you. And like you would take your car in for a regular checkup and service and tune-up, oil change, etc., this is doing the same thing for your home. So to protect the value of the home, to keep it up, to keep it maintenance-free, and to keep all these things fresh, to keep the windows and doors working properly, to fix those leaky faucets, you know, just verbatim as the gentleman comes and visits the home, it seemed like a bit of a no-brainer. And we don't see that offered in the marketplace. So that is something under our service offering that makes iHandyman very unique in the marketplace. And we're getting a very good reception as a result of that. So we see great things for iHandyman. You know, having just launched it less than a year ago, we've already put out several master franchises, which would be selling and servicing the unit franchises throughout to Central and Western Canada, as well as Florida. And we've already done four countries in North Africa. So we see big things happening with iHandyman.
Well, that's absolutely a tremendous opportunity. I love the way it ties into also the you know, the senior market that wants to stay in their home and they need to take care of their home too. This is Franchise Today. I'm Paul Segretto. Stan Friedman, my co-host, is not with us today. He's in Washington, D.C. Our guest today is Bill Redfern, CEO and founder of Global Franchise Opportunities. Franchise Today is brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and content management software designed specifically for managing franchise relationships. Built-in industry-leading Microsoft Dynamics CRM, these solutions are both cloud-based as well as fully accessible right from inside your Outlook inbox. With FRM, you'll spend more time focused on the business of building top and bottom line growth, while FRM assists with effectively managing communications and collaboration with your prospective and existing franchisees. Sort, report, and dashboard all of your vital data and empower your team to accelerate franchise sales, streamline store openings, and better manage your processes, workflows, unit-level performance, and compliance. No hassles, no long-term contracts, no excuses, just solutions on the web at frmsolutions.com. Franchise Today is also brought to you by Franchise Foundry, a business accelerator boasting more than 30 years of experience helping emerging brands bring sustainable growth to their franchise systems. Utilizing a hybrid coaching and consulting approach, the Foundry team fosters development and deployment of effective short- and long-term solutions for their clients in several key areas, including franchise management and operations, change management, traditional and digital marketing and technology, relationship and business management, and, of course, franchise recruitment and development. The Foundry also assists franchise brands in raising capital and the exploration of mergers and acquisition opportunities. Learn more about the expanding list of clients across various industry segments at franchisefoundry.com. So you've got three different brands, and I take from a couple of things you said about some commonalities: low overhead, being able to work from home, building equity in the business, building a sustainable brand. Is there anything else that is common between the three that might be unique in and of itself? Is there any type of technology, maybe some type of, you know, CRM that's the same across all brands? You know, in essence, tell us a little bit about the franchise models and how they might or be similar, or how they might be different.
Well, that's a fantastic question, and sure, there are similarities, and it's funny you mentioned CRM. That is certainly one of them. For each of the three brands, which are very industry-specific, we do use proprietary software for the three, and of course, we include CRM. What we found, Paul, was, and I'll use the buyer's choice as an example, in the home inspection industry, of course, you have an awful lot of people that are, you know, one- or two-person businesses, and they may or may not retain great customer lists and this sort of thing. And I've always had a belief, if we're going to bring someone in and they, you know, they put the good faith forward and spend the money on buying a franchise, that, you know, we have a duty of care to help them to develop a great business and certainly do our best to guide them in that path. Well, ultimately, you know, we're not going to stay young forever. So we like to think that they'd think about an exit strategy, and we talk about this in our initial training with each of the franchise partners. I'd like to think that whatever their window is it 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, or 20 years, or what have you, that if we keep good software packages in good place in place in each model and manage those customer lists, we nurture those customer lists so the business goes from that infancy stage from when they're buying their franchise and they're bushy-tailed and bright-eyed. You know, a lot of them are first-time entrepreneurs going into business for their own, maybe having left punching a time clock somewhere, or, you know, been sidelined or laid off or what have you. It would be nice to think that at some point, rather than just walk away from a business like many small business people do, because it might be hard to sell Bill's Home Inspection for any value. I know a lot of realtors have fantastic real estate practices, but they have great difficulty getting any real value out of that customer list. So with a franchise, you know, if a person, a unit franchise partner, is earning a great income and they're doing this year over year, it'd be nice to think that part of their exit strategy is to be able to sell that business on. And our belief is with our support systems and the horsepower that we bring to the table in terms of marketing and development and presence in the marketplace, it should be an easy transition. And because someone knows the brand within the marketplace, moreover than the individual, which is something, you know, the real estate market transitioned from many years ago, where companies like Remax allowed the individual to promote their name on their signage over the company name. With us, it just made a whole bunch of sense to help the people right from the beginning talk about, you know, how long are you planning on being in this business? You're 40 years of age. Do you want to look at 60 or 65 as getting out or getting out partially? And we try to provide a plan right from the beginning, you know, that may be designed around, you know, if they're having additional inspectors, for instance, with a buyer's choice, 3 or 4 additional inspectors on their team, you know, they could pull back their labor input, you know, by a target date of X. I like to think that we offer a lot of unique strategies, you know, just having been there for some time in small business and try to make it work for our franchise partners, you know, in the best possible fashion. And of course, that is highly individualistic. You know, you might be satisfied with, you know, being a rock star within the industry, and the next guy might be satisfied with earning a comfortable living but working for himself as opposed to answering to someone else and controlling his schedule a little bit. But, we like to think we're clever enough and flexible enough to make it work for our partners and partners-to-be, and that certainly applies to all three brands. In saying that, we went through significant investment over the years and transformations in many cases, you know, from various products in the industry to very complex programs, you know, for software, both in everything from report writing to customer usability. You know, for instance, we use a white labeled industry brand product in the home care sector, where the customer's family or, you know, the responsible party among the family can, they have a signed-in code and they can grade online on the software and check on the caregiver's notes every time they visit their mom or dad. We find down south here in the Florida market, with a lot of seniors retired here, you'll have the sons and daughters maybe up in New Jersey or, you know, the middle part of the country. And, you know, that's a terrific feature. They can go in and log in and see the caregiver's notes, and they might be as simple as, Mrs. Jones looked well today. It appeared that she took her medication. You know, we went for a walk, went into Publix, bought her some fresh vegetables, some bread. We'll see her again on Thursday. And they find that very comforting. So it all falls back for us on user friendliness for the franchise partner and the consumer touch in terms of customer service and stickiness with the consumer. You know, consumer can certainly spend their money anywhere, and we'd like to be easy to do business with so that they can try and use our franchise partners and support them accordingly.
It seems to me, in addition to creating positive and memorable experiences at all times, that you're also creating peace of mind with each of your brands.
We certainly believe so. I think the key component, and I liked your opening commentary on the IFA study recently about, you know, franchising being such a dominant factor in creating employment in this country and many others. You know, small business is where it's at. I know there's a certain segment of the economy and of the population that enjoy working for the IBMs of the world, but there's a lot of people that would really be answering to their own time clock. Excuse me. We've got so many examples within our franchise system where somebody maybe came from being a police officer or came from being a flight attendant. Was a recent example we featured on a success profile, to where they were away for, you know, a couple of days at a time or 4 days at a time and away overnight a lot of the time, whereas now they're able to coordinate their own schedule where they can pick up their kids after school at 3 o'clock or 3:30 when they're finishing school and, you know, spend the evening with them or block out a weekend or what have you. So it's really quite interesting. We're very fortunate in many ways, but small business is a fantastic opportunity, and so much of the economy – you know, even though we all buy the Apple products and what have you, an awful lot of the economy is dictated by small business. And even when I drive through Starbucks drive-thru in the morning, you know, that's still a small business that some guy put his money out, went through the training, and operates that franchise in many cases. And, it's a significant part of this economy, and we're very fortunate to be part of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think it's going to obviously continue to grow, as they say. We're in an entrepreneurial economy, and I read something not too long ago that said by 2020, which is not all that far in the future, that almost 40% of the people, working people, will be, you know, basically in an entrepreneurial capacity, either as a, you know, franchisee, a solopreneur, maybe a sole practitioner, selling some type of professional services, MLM, or whatever. That's a huge number. And as your brands grow, I'm sure there are multi-unit opportunities. Are there multi-brand opportunities within your organization?
I believe there are. There are multi-unit opportunities. We've learned over the years to temper the enthusiasm somewhat for eye care. For instance, we cap it at a maximum of 3 units for the first 3 years till they've established themselves. Sometimes people get very enthusiastic and take on or ask to take on a little more territory than maybe can develop as soon as you would like. But mm-hmm. that just goes to the learning experiences over the years. There's certainly multi-brand opportunities. We've got a couple of instances where just recently where somebody would buy a master franchise for a buyer's choice, home inspections, and pair it up with iHandyman services immediately with the intention of developing both brand, the franchise partners into a geographical area simultaneously. And the reason is they just simply complement one another so well. You know, the
right.
majority of home
right.
inspections identify the need for some maintenance and or repairs. And it just appears to be very popular. You know, we've had a lot of, you know, friends in the real estate agent and brokerage just will comment that they like the idea of the service so much that as a closing gift, rather than giving a fruit basket or something, they'll give a 2 or 3 hour visit by the handyman service, you know, to help with hanging the pictures and doing some of the repairs that are always needed. So we see it as filling a void in the market, in my opinion. You know, there's a need for these folks that are out there on an hourly rate, you know, whether it's building some IKEA furniture or doing some repairs or doing the recurring services that I talked about that we've designed into this package to create a, you know, recurring revenue stream for our franchise partner. There's a need in the marketplace for a good, professional, reliable handyman service. And, of course, in our opinion, at a price point for the want-to-be entrepreneur that works. You know, it's like any business. There's, you know, you can spend $1 million to go buy yourself into a restaurant operation or something. But with iHandyman, for instance, excuse me, we've typically not offered financing with any of our franchise brands. And in the U.S. market, for instance, we just started advertising here in the past 10 days or 2 weeks that for iHandyman, we're actually taking a $5,000 deposit and financing the balance. So for $5,000, somebody can start the wheels turning on their own business and within 2 to 3 months on average be open for business and generating revenue. So, you know, this is a real opportunity, and when you see all these people that are still punching a time clock somewhere, you know, they really need to look hard at something where they can do something for themselves, create employment, and really feel good about what they've done at the end of the day.
Sure. I can see that, and certainly with iHandyman, I know I would want to be dealing with a company as opposed to just finding a name in the back of a newspaper or something. At least I know I'm dealing with people that have been vetted out, so to speak.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that, and the same thing applies to a buyer's choice, is people want to deal with someone they can call back if there's a problem. They, you know, they,
mm-hmm.
if
right.
you buy something from Amazon that doesn't fit, you can send it back. you get some guy to come over and fix a tile on your floor, good luck getting him back.
You know, sure.
With our system, it's just simply inherent in the system, and the same with a buyer's choice. You know, they're dealing with full-time people that are committed to their business. We don't take anyone under a part-time arrangement to open a franchise. They have to commit themselves to the business full-time, and they're there. They're insured. They're a professional. They're licensed. You know, where licensing is applicable. You have a problem 2 or 3 months down the road, give them a call. They're going to do their best to honor the problem and make it right. And to us, that's just customer service. And it might be old school to some, but, again, we'd like to be easy to do business with. And I'd like to think that we're top of mind with our customers. And when it comes time to refer a service, that they think of us again. And to call a guy out of the business card stuck on the cork board at the grocery store to come over and do some painting, I might not be so lucky to get him back in a month when I'm not happy with the job. So, you know, we hope that our franchise partners, and I'm reasonably sure the majority of them do, convey that same feeling to the consumers that they deal with. You know, we're fortunate again, and small business allows you to do that.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, the ideal candidate. And I know you're dealing with some unit-level franchisees as well as some master or area developers. What are you looking for in the ideal candidates for both?
Well, that's a great question, and my answer might surprise you. In both instances, I'm not looking for tradespeople. I'm not looking for medical practitioners. I'm looking for business people and want to be business people. So my ideal candidate, and this applies internationally as well as in North America, for a unit franchise partner, I would rather have a young lady or a young man that works at the front desk of a hotel who can understand customer service and make problems right. So you walk up, you check into your room, you're not happy. The room hasn't been cleaned. It's not the size room that you had booked. Whatever the case is, they make you happy. Happy enough that you give them a good rating when you leave. Give them a 4 or 5 star rating. Okay, that's the kind of person I want as a franchise prospect, and that's going to make a fantastic franchise partner. We've always had the belief that we can train the technical. What we can't train is personality and desire and motivation. That really is an individualistic thing where they have to, you know, believe they want something or to, you know, desire a need for a better life or control their schedule, whatever it is. So the perfect prospect for us is not the guy who's out there swinging a hammer now. In some cases, yes, and I'm not talking down about, you know, that segment of the economy. They're great folks. But the perfect prospect for us is the want-to-be business person. And our average demographic, for instance, that comes into Buyer's Choice is 35 to 55. 66% of them are men. We're getting a larger segment every year of women coming into that business. iHandyman, we'll expect to see similar statistics. iCare, surprisingly enough, we're getting almost equal number of prospective franchise partners that are male and female. And I suspected initially that we'd have more women coming into that business that might be, empty nesters. You know, the children are off to university and they want something, more fulfilling for their days. But that's proven me wrong so far. So the ideal prospect for us is really someone looking for self-employment, looking for an opportunity to create something a little better, and they're the ones that we love to work with.
No, go right ahead. That's what I was going to ask about.
Yeah, master franchises, or some call regional developers. We don't call them regional developers because in our brands, they actually buy the license. They're buying the territory rights. Whether it's international or domestic, that's your generally more experienced business person who's been around, had a business or two, worked at a mid to higher level executive role. They understand the concept of building out a business. They understand the concept of sales and what it would take, the market development, the market penetration. They understand market share, how they can influence market share for the franchise partners from a higher level. And, again, we're looking for a more seasoned business person in that role. Internationally, we have found some fantastic partners. You know, our new partners in India come to mind. Just fantastic people. You know, my wife and I visited early April to attend a grand opening in Calcutta, India, and extremely professional, well organized. They had 36 or 37 members of the press. The U.S. Embassy representative was there. You know, it was just a terrific event, and already, and again, a new service into a new marketplace with, you know, a scads of population, already being very, very well received. And just very good quality people. You know, we're so impressed, mm-hmm. Paul. They toured us around, two of the group of partners that are involved in the business there, and one was close to my own heart with the autism. Because of having an autistic child themselves and not able to find any support services, they actually bought a four-story building that they turned into a school that they don't charge these kids or their families. They use it as a drop-in center. Children right up through adults can come in and spend the day, part of the day, the evening, what have you, and they'll work with them, everything from ABA therapies to teaching vocational skills. They presented my wife with a beautiful necklace that, you know, one of the young girls made, and she was just as proud as a peacock, you know, to give this to her and show her what she made for her. One of the other partners, and I just couldn't believe this either, they have for 20-odd years now, and again, we visited a school that they fund and support, provide the building, the land, for 200 school children daily, you know, grades 1 through 6. And these are not homeless kids or you know, orphans or anything, but they wouldn't have the funding to from the family to provide clothing and books and the various things they need to go to school otherwise. And, English is the working language of the country in India. So most of these kids were, you know, already speak English very well and were very receptive. And of course, we had a ball visiting them. We visited every classroom and said hello and, you know, had great chats. And within minutes, even the ones who weren't speaking English had big smiles on their faces and were high-fiving me. And, you know, I was asking them what they had for future plans. And one little guy stands up. He's in grade 6, and he holds up a book, and he shows a couple of the soccer stars on it. And he says, "I'm going to be a soccer player." And, you know, these are kids that are dirt poor, but, you know, they had a dream. And we were very touched by that. But that wouldn't happen without the generosity of our partners there. So we've been fortunate. We've got some very, very smart people that have joined our business, and that's the kind of people we're looking for.
That is a fantastic story. Thanks for sharing. So I know you're looking at a lot of growth. I've seen some press releases. I know you've recently expanded into Africa, and I imagine the growth will continue. How do individuals learn more about your opportunities and where they might find information, and also if you're going to be at any upcoming, you know, franchise events or expos? Tell us about them at this point.
Easiest way to track us down is our Global Franchise Opportunities website. The address is gfoonline.biz, gfoonline.biz. Look us up. Give me a call at the office here anytime. I'm more than happy to talk to anyone who's interested in the business. Excuse me. We just did a very successful franchise show in the Toronto, Canada market this past weekend. We're doing another one in the coming months in Ottawa, Canada, in Ontario. We don't do a whole lot of franchise shows in the U.S. We find most of our work is online as of late in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
But we're more than happy to have any of our prospective franchise partners come and have a visit and spend a discovery day with us here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And in terms of growth, yes, absolutely. You know, over the next 5 years, you're going to see us exceed 500 franchises in the U.S., if not even a few more. We see topping 50 countries is our goal, written in big letters here on my office wall, again, on that five-year timeline. On the current trajectory that we're on, that may happen a little sooner, but, you know, being realistic and the way the economies fluctuate internationally, I think that's a very realistic target.
Well, I think it is. My best wishes for your continued success. I'm sure it'll be greater than we could even imagine. And I do thank you for being my guest today. on Franchise Today, and certainly apologize for Stan not being able to be on the show. I know he wanted to talk with you as well, but we're all running in a bunch of different directions. But again, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you very much, Paul, for having us, and thank you to your listeners. I hope they get some value out of the podcast.
I'm sure they will. There's so many of our listeners that are emerging brands that use the information from Franchise Today and so graciously provided by individuals such as yourself. They use it to learn more and more about franchising and about building a sustainable brand. It's kind of what keeps me going now, 7.5 years with the show, because so many come to me and say, you know, I listened to your show 3 years ago, 2 years ago. I listened to these segments. We use them for internal training. I mean, to me, it's my way of giving back to the franchising community that's been so good to me over the years. So I really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, that's another wrap-up for Franchise Today. Great show today. We've got some guests booked through the end of the year. Really special thanks to the great folks at All Points PR, Fishman Public Relations, Bizcom Public Relations. We really value our relationship with each of those organizations, providing us some great guests and content for the show that continues to make Franchise Today one of the top podcasts in all of franchising. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretta, wishing you the best, the very best in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.